searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to the courts, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power.
Hello and welcome into this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you're happy. It's Friday. Hi there. The weekend is upon us. You can't avoid it any longer. It's knocking at the door. Go ahead, look at your doorbell camera. You see that out there? It's the weekend. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to this weekend. It's going to be a good one. I hope it's going to be a good one for you, too. This is the Daily Perspective Podcast, the Friday, February 21 edition, 2020, with much to talk about. It's another one of those. Yesterday was another one of those days where I was looking at things going, wow, is there really anything to talk about that hasn't been worn out already? And as the day unfolded, so did more possibilities of things to be chatting about today. And we'll be looking at a handful of things. Yes, we'll still be looking at Bernie Sanders. We'll look at the Roger Stone situation. But there's more. There's more to talk about. And hopefully, we'll get into as much as I'd like to today. Yesterday, around the studio, pretty much uneventful. Not a heck of a lot going on. I did finish up a video project that I was working on, and I added the end result to a website project I'm working on. And then what else is there? Really, yesterday, not much. Just it was one of those kind of dead days for me yesterday. And so at one point in the afternoon, I took advantage of it and gathered up Princess Shaggy Feet, Kimber the Wonder Dog, and crashed in the chair. Just, I got to be honest with you, I took about a 20-minute nap, and it was awesome. Because the night before, I told you yesterday, I had trouble sleeping the night before. So yesterday afternoon, I just kind of hit a wall and said, all right, that's it. I'm through making things up to do to stay awake. I am through trying to push through this. Instead of being a soldier and pushing forward until it's time to go to bed tonight, I give. And I hit the chair. Just, I'm gone. So, but afterwards, great. Felt great. And feeling a whole lot better today because I got a great night's sleep last night. I am roaring, ready for Friday, ready for it, looking forward to it. I've got to finalize. I have two podcast edits for Dawson Now to finish today. I've got those to finish up and get posted and ready to roll. One for next week and one for the week after. And, actually, both of them are really interesting podcasts. And again, I want to recommend that you, if you haven't already, that you check out the Dawson Now podcast. It's Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N, and the word now. And it's available where fine podcasts are found, everywhere. And you can grab a hold of it and listen to, let's see, this week is a conference wrap up. Next week and the following week, they're both political in nature. And one of them is actually, they're both featuring people, and that's what the podcast is really about. It's about people, not about politics. It's not about social events or any kind of thing like that. It's really about people, and it's about a specific kind of person, the kind of person who is a cultural gatekeeper, so to speak. Someone who is a cultural catalyst is the way Scott likes to put it. And the next 2 weeks are people who are cultural catalysts in the world of politics. And they're very interesting. I think the one next week, not this coming week, but the second one, it features a U.S. congressperson that you have heard of. He was in our studio, and it's a good podcast. Listen to both of them. I think you'll be entertained and enlightened at the same time, because we have some fun up front and then we get serious. And it's a good little podcast. Both of those episodes, if you're politically minded, and you wouldn't be listening to this if you weren't politically minded, you'll enjoy these next two Dawson Now podcasts, and you might want to subscribe and listen to what he has to say from then on. Good stuff. It's, let's see, I got to look at my list of stuff here and see what we have to talk about. Bernie Sanders is, wow. You know, Bernie Sanders is a piece of work. He really is. And the man is constantly angry. And he seems to be, he wants to portray himself as being constantly angry on behalf of the little guy, the worker, the person who's been downtrodden, walked upon, who has billionaires standing on his back, making their billions of dollars off of his work. He's that guy. Bernie is, he declares himself to be a democratic socialist, and his field people, when you confront them about his democratic, his socialism, if you just call him a socialist, they correct you, and they will continue correcting you. They say, no, he's not a socialist. He's a democratic socialist. I would say, being honest, no, he's not a democratic socialist. He's not a socialist. He's a communist. Because the more you hear him talk, and the more worked up he gets about things, the more obvious it is that this man is a dyed-in-the-wool communist. And he's angry, and he wants everybody to believe that he has the right way, the right path. He has the solution to everything. He has the key to fairness for all mankind. And it comes in a system that's not what we're using now. And he's selling exactly the same thing every democratic socialist fraud has sold to the people in every country which has embraced socialism. And then realized once they've embraced it, they can't un-embrace it. Yeah, because that's how it works. In the socialist world, what happens is you embrace it because it's fair for all people. It's not fair that there are billionaires. They shouldn't exist. Thank you, Chuck Todd from NBC. What a piece of work you are. And that the little person should have a bigger say in everything. It all sounds great. Doesn't it sound fair to you? I mean, Bernie Sanders actually said so on the debate stage the other night, that all of those workers should have a say in how things are done at the companies they work for. And Michael Bloomberg, who, by the way, is another big piece of work, Michael Bloomberg said, no, that's a terrible idea. And he's right. He said a few things I actually have to say he was right about, and that was one of them. He is right. The reason that a company succeeds is not necessarily just because of the work done on the line to build the products that are made or to perform the services which are rendered. The reason the companies succeed is because there are people in place who direct its progress, who direct its growth, who have the ideas that move it forward. Some of those ideas come through the suggestion box. This is true. But the vast majority of them come from a different kind of worker, someone whose talents lie in a different area in the same field. And that particular kind of worker is the idea person that helps move the business forward. And if they're right about what they do, it grows. More people get jobs. The people who've been there longer get more money, and everything grows and everything improves and everybody advances as they are willing to advance. Bernie Sanders refuses to recognize that that is how things work, and he wants all of those people sitting around the conference table at the board meetings making decisions with the board of directors and the people in charge of directing the company forward for the future. And the problem with that is that the perspective of the people on the line is vastly different than the perspective of the people sitting around those conference tables. The people on the line have a keen insight into how their product is made and how it is used, but the people sitting around that conference table have a keen insight on how that product or service makes money. And it's the making money part that is just as important as the product or service itself. Bernie Sanders, having never had 1 second of real life experience in that world, is operating completely and totally in the realm of theory. and following the directives of others before him with the same level of experience who have hurt millions of people with their ideas. But when you ask him and his followers, they will tell you they did it the wrong way. They were the wrong people. Their motives were not pure, etc., etc., etc. Oddly enough, what these people don't realize is that the followers of all those other people said the same thing, and they wound up in the same situation as those who went before them. So Bernie is selling a very old, stinky bucket of dead fish that's been dead for a long time and stinks to high heaven, and everybody around him has clothespins on their nose and says, "What smell?" Bless his heart. But we'll get more into Bernie a little bit later on, because he's a nasty character. And then there's Bloomberg as well. John Bolton's back in the news. Roger Stone. Well, Roger Stone was sentenced, and that's going to be an interesting situation. Going over to The Blaze is a story by Nate Madden, a longtime GOP operative and former Trump campaign associate. Roger Stone, sentenced to 40 months in federal prison yesterday after prosecutors' previous efforts to get him a longer sentence became a subject of national controversy. According to Fox News, before announcing the sentence in a federal courtroom in Washington, the judge in the case, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson, took a firm stance toward the Republican operative, faulting him for the actions that led to the charges. She sentenced him to 40 months in prison. She said, "Mr. Stone lied." She also said Stone injected himself smack into a political controversy and was not persecuted. Stone chose not to speak when given the opportunity. Probably on the advice of counsel, probably very wise, because they're not going to allow this to stop here. They are going to push forward. You know they will appeal. And if this judge doesn't allow them to appeal, then others will probably step in to help, because this entire process has been dirty. Stone was found guilty in November on 7 counts that included lying to Congress, witness tampering, and obstructing a congressional investigation, which stemmed from special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. The 67-year-old Stone was indicted in January following a heavily armed pre-dawn FBI raid at his Fort Lauderdale, Florida home. You probably remember that. The reason you saw it on the news is because CNN was there. CNN was on the site with the FBI raid team. And everybody said, "Well, that's curious." Assistant U.S. Attorney John Crabb said about the case, "This prosecution is and was righteous." He's echoing a comment Attorney General William Barr made about the matter last week. Going forward, he says, the defendant was found guilty by a jury of his peers obstructing justice, lying to Congress, and witness tampering. The court should impose a substantial period of incarceration. According to NBC News, however, Stone will not have to report to prison until the judge decides on the defense's pending motion for a new trial, stemming from a claim of juror bias. Last week, it was reported that jury foreman Tomika Hart was a former Democratic congressional candidate and had a long history of anti-Trump social media posts. In addition to the concerns about juror bias, the trial was also recently plagued by controversy about the sentencing itself. Last week, all four line prosecutors handling the case resigned after the Department of Justice put out an amended sentencing memo saying that the initial recommendation of 7 to 9 years could be considered excessive and unwarranted. That was after President Donald Trump tweeted that the initial recommendation was a miscarriage of justice. Actually, that line is wrong. They resigned after that, yes, but the memo did not come out after the tweet. The department's change, of course, on the sentencing recommendation generated considerable backlash against Barr, which included over 2,000 former Justice Department officials. That's also a misnomer. That is, these 2,000 former Justice Department officials, they're all deep state insider people, people who've been government employees and deeply entrenched in that mentality. They called for his resignation over concerns of political interference in the process. Barr said in an interview later that Trump had never asked him to do anything in a criminal case. And we're all familiar with what happened after that, about him saying the tweets that the president makes it impossible for him to do his job. But the bottom line is, it was an unjust sentence enhancement. It was fairly obvious to those observing, who were being honest, that prosecutors were trying to send a message, and they were trying to slap Donald Trump. They were trying to dirty him in the eyes of the American people by imposing a very strict sentence on a man associated with him. And that's what it was all about, and still is. It's all about tarnishing Donald Trump. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. You are there. Yeah, Princess Shaggy Feet. Kimber the Wonder Dog, she's back behind me back there. Looks like everybody's here, so let's move forward. I tell you, I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I say that from time to time. I really am looking forward to this weekend. It's just been one of those weeks where I'm looking forward to the peace and quiet that comes after today. I just am. Get up tomorrow morning early, go have breakfast with my bud Mike. We'll go scavenge around some thrift stores and just not do anything important. And that'll be great. And everybody needs to do something like that on the weekend, where you just kind of detach from everything that's the regular routine and sort of reset your brain. It's important. Very, very important. I talk about it from time to time. You should. You really, really should. Now, there are lots of ways to do that. Family, friends, pets, hobbies, activities, whatever. Just detach from the regular day and do what you want to do. And part of that also needs to be time without anybody's outside influence. I referred to this before. You need to go to the quiet from time to time. No music, no podcast, no talking, nobody, nothing else. Just go to the quiet. Give it a little time. Give it half an hour this weekend. That's not a lot of time. Give it 30 minutes of your time. Set a timer. Shut everything down. Take a walk in the woods. Go to the park. Just be quiet. And see what happens. If we had more of that, we'd have less of the stupidity that we see going on in the world around us today. I was just talking about this whole thing with the Roger Stone sentencing. People aren't honest with themselves, and they're not honest with the people around them, and they're not honest with the society surrounding them, the government, the people. They're dishonest about everything. And they have, and as a result, they get focused on things that damage other people. And they do so for revenge. And we're watching it play out. I think it's interesting that the president, you know, one of the things they're talking about is, oh yeah, he'll pardon Roger Stone. He'll do that. I'm not so sure. He may, if it's necessary, he may. But there are those who on social media are talking about the pardons he's done. He's done, what is it, 26, 27 pardons, something like that. It's a small number. That sounds like a lot if you don't know the context, but it's a small number. And yeah, he's pardoned some people. He has his reasons, but he hasn't pardoned other people, and they're thinking, you know, why not? And when you look at the context, he hasn't done anything to speak of, because back during the Obama years, Obama issued clemency to 1,927 federal criminals, almost 2,000 of them. Did anybody point fingers at him and scream corruption? No. nobody on the left or in the mainstream press. No, they didn't. Because Obama, remember, Obama was the guy. He was the man. He was leading a crusade.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
He was leading a crusade. What was the object of his crusade?
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Yeah. Remember what I've said. You don't fundamentally transform something you love. You restore it. You don't transform something you love. If you have to transform it, you don't love it. If you love it, you'll restore it to its former glory. But Obama's object was to fundamentally transform the United States of America into something completely different. And as a result, President Trump is now fixing everything Obama broke. And everybody who loved Obama blindly is livid about it. Absolutely livid. It's a sad state of affairs. A very sad state of affairs. Let's get back into the stack, shall we? Former National Security Advisor John Bolton has broken his silence. Yesterday, he spoke out. He slammed the Democratic Party-led impeachment against Donald Trump as a grossly partisan effort. Bolton's the author of an upcoming book on his experience in the White House. He also said that his testimony would not have changed the outcome of the Senate impeachment trial. That's what the AP is saying. He made the comments at a public appearance alongside Susan Rice, his counterpart under President Barack Obama. While the former diplomat refused to disclose any details regarding his book, he did say he believed that the House committee committed impeachment malpractice. The AP reports that drew some grumbling from his audience. The retired official also noted that the manner in which Democrats handled the impeachment drove Republicans who might have voted for impeachment away because it was so partisan. He's absolutely dead correct about that. It was so nasty, so partisan, so blatantly power hungry that everybody just kind of folded their arms up and sat back and said, well, you can't include me in this. He also noted that contrary to claims by Democrats who called upon him to testify, he does not believe that his testimony would have changed the final impeachment outcome. Though he did not expect the Senate to vote against having him appear. By the way, it wasn't just him. It was all witnesses. And the reason, I'm kind of surprised that he was surprised, honestly, because the Democrats didn't make their case. They didn't have a case. They didn't have a constitutional foundation for their case. They didn't have a case. They had it was like a bunch of kids pointing at somebody and screaming, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, and that's kind of what the Democrat case was. They were making it up on the fly as they went, and nothing was holding any water. He says, people can argue about what I should have said and what I should have done. I would bet you a dollar right here and now, my testimony would have made no difference to the ultimate outcome. Susan Rice, however, the progressive Obama foot kisser, disagreed, telling Bolton that the audience that nothing would have caused her to refuse to share information with Congress or the public that I thought was of national import. I can't imagine withholding my testimony with or without a subpoena. I also can't imagine, frankly, in the absence of being able to provide that information directly to Congress, not having exercised my First Amendment right to speak publicly at a time when my testimony or my experience would be relevant. I think what that means, if I may do a little translating, is that Susan Rice didn't care what the laws, what the federal laws have to say. She didn't care about the constitutional process. She doesn't care about how things are supposed to work in this country. That if it were her, she would have called a press conference and said whatever she wanted to say, whether it was legal for her to do so or not, whether it was appropriate for her to do so or not, and that she would have completely disregarded the chain of command. She would have disregarded the law. She would have ignored the Constitution and just gone with her emotions. And that's pretty much what she has to say. Bolton said the reason he didn't spill his guts regarding the president's dealings with Ukraine is that he could have faced criminal prosecution if he had shared, even inadvertently, information that's deemed classified. When asked if he would have complied with a House subpoena, Bolton cited the White House review process that's determining whether the contents of his book can be disclosed. He said, I'm not here to speculate on that with the pre-publication review process underway. He said that, and that got some laughs from some of the audience. He said, laugh all you want. This is the judgment of my counsel, somebody I worked with 30 years ago at the Department of Justice. So he's had legal counsel tell him, no, zip your lip. And his legal counsel is wise. And he is wise to follow their advice. You see, John Bolton, whether you like him or not, is actually more savvy than Susan Rice. And I would say more respectable than Susan Rice. Because Susan Rice is clearly a radical leftist who sees her emotions, her feelings, her self as more important. Her opinion, her views, more important than the rule of law. And that's one of the chief problems we have in America today, is that the progressives have no respect for the rule of law.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
What did I do? Hey there. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. Thanks for being part of the podcast. Or the live feed on Facebook Live. Don't forget that. You can go to the Daily Perspective podcast page. You can go to the Mark Congleton page. Coming up in two places on Facebook each morning. And as a result, excuse me, Facebook saves the video, makes it available all day long. I don't know how long they actually do that, but I know I've seen it later in the day. Every now and then, I'll let a piece of bumper music go for too long, and their algorithms can detect who and what it is, and they shut it down. They'll actually silence a portion because of the music, because all of this licensing stuff that goes on. And it's not like I'm doing a music show where I'm not bootlegging music to play music and do a music show for people. It's about talk. It's about me running my mouth. And the bumper music is just a little bit of familiarity. Something, oh, I remember that song. I remember that. And then, boom, we're talking. And that's what it is. And if you let a little too much go, the computers go, I suspect this is not licensed. And then they silence you. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Go ahead. I really don't care. It is the Friday edition of the podcast. Kudos, hats off, tip of the hat to my friend Keith Buckner. Keith Buckner is a computer repair guy. Got a great little business where he does all kinds of stuff involving electronics and the like. And he posts this to Facebook earlier this morning, and I just stumbled across it. And it says, CNN says that Elizabeth Warren, dislikes Mike because, quote, he's using his own money, end quote. Think about that. And I did think about it, and it's absolutely precious. Elizabeth Warren said she doesn't like Bloomberg because he's using his own money. So whose money should he be using, Ms. Warren? Whose money should Mike Bloomberg be using? Mine? Oh, yeah, that's right. You have an OPM addiction. OPM, oh, the letters, OP, that's other people's money. See, politicians are addicted to OPM, using other people's money to accomplish their goals. They go on begging tours. Please fund my campaign. Everything they do is done with other people's money. So Elizabeth Warren is unhappy that the law allows Mike Bloomberg to use his own money. She dislikes that strongly because she doesn't have billions of dollars to blow on a presidential campaign. If she did, thank God she doesn't. But if she did, holy crap, we would be facing an onslaught of Elizabeth Warren commercials every time we go to turn on the TV on cable or we go look at YouTube or something like that. You know, I said the other day that I've been bombarded with these Michael Bloomberg ads on YouTube when I go to YouTube to watch things, and then they stopped. And I'm like, oh, thank goodness. That's awesome. So for about 3-4 days, no Mike Bloomberg ads, and then yesterday, boom, they're back. They're back with a vengeance. There are Mike Bloomberg ads all over YouTube again. And Jane and I were watching DVR'd stuff, which TV shows that we've missed. So last night we sat down and watched maybe an hour and a half of DVR'd material. And I saw no less in 90 minutes, I saw no less than 6 Michael Bloomberg ads. There may have been more. I remember 6. So he's back with a vengeance, but he's spending his own money. And it's just not fair. It's just not fair. There should be a law. I don't say that I disagree. I think there should be some kind of limits to political advertising. But her motivation is because she doesn't have the money. He does. Somebody else who doesn't have the money is Bernie Sanders. Although Bernie is a millionaire, he has 3 homes. One of them is a lake home. He calls it a camp. Oh, that's a summer camp. If you're not familiar with in the Northeast, in the lake countries, a lot of people have a summer camp. Like in the South, people have lake homes. We just call it, hey, I got a lake house. It's more accurate. It's a lake house. It's not someplace you'd want to live all the time because the toilet works usually, and it's a little weird, and there's no insulation, and all the air conditioning is like it's one window unit for the whole place and that kind of a thing. And so it's not really the kind of place that you would want to spend a lot of time in, but it's great for weekend getaways or maybe a week in the summer. That sort of a thing, to go spend time on the lake. And that's kind of common all over where you have lakes. So Bernie has one of those. And he's a millionaire. Well, Sanders is livid about Michael Bloomberg using his own money to supposedly buy the presidential nomination. And Bernie does have a point, like I just said, about Warren. But he's also a major hypocrite when it comes to trying to buy the election. And there's this cartoon, this political cartoon. It's precious. It's side by side. 2 images of Bernie Sanders at a podium. On the left, we can't let billionaires like Michael Bloomberg buy the 2020 election. And the next one, we should let me buy the 2020 election. And he's holding up a piece of paper that says, get free stuff when you vote for me. And so he wants giveaways to buy his election for him. And where is he going to pay? How is he going to pay for those giveaways? With your money. So basically what he's going to do is give you free stuff you paid for. Wait a minute, that's not free, right? Of course, Bloomberg trying to buy the election is the least of it. It looks like Bloomberg has a China problem as well. He has a huge conflict of interest and a very checkered past when it comes to his support for China and its communist leadership. In a September 2019 interview with PBS's Firing Line, Bloomberg said, quote, the Communist Party wants to stay in power in China, and they listen to the public. Further, he says, Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents or he's not going to survive. Those words actually came out of his mouth. I've seen the video. Bloomberg failed to mention that in 2013, Bloomberg News was caught in a scandal when it killed news stories revealing corruption related to Xi Jinping's family members, prompting various reporters and editors to resign from Bloomberg News. It turned out that Bloomberg News leadership told the editors that stories about the families of Politburo members were off limits. When challenged by host Margaret Hoover of PBS on whether he really believes she is responsive to the democratic will of the people, Bloomberg doubled down, saying the Chinese Communist Party looks at Russia and they look for where the Communist Party is and they don't find it anymore. And they don't want that to happen, so they really are responsive. These absurd statements fly in the face of what's happening in Xinjiang province with the forced imprisonment of nearly 12 million Uyghur Muslims in re-education camps. The continuing government crackdown on the citizens of Hong Kong as well, as the closing of innumerable Christian churches, jailing pastors, even rewriting scripture. Additionally, nearly 500,000 individuals are currently detained in black jails and mental health institutions without trial, charges, or access to legal aid. Most recently, video has surfaced of the government's reaction to the coronavirus, physically dragging victims or potential victims of the virus, kicking and screaming into expansive state penitentiaries. As Josh Rogan of the Washington Post points out, among the ways Michael Bloomberg and his company Bloomberg LP make a considerable amount of money in China is not only through the extraordinarily profitable licensing of its financial software, but via its massive Bloomberg Barclays Global Aggregate Bond Index. Bloomberg LP is helping finance Chinese companies by sending billions of U.S. investor dollars into the Chinese bond market. Bloomberg is clearly a reprehensible person who puts his own personal financial interests far ahead of the interests of his country. This is not hugely different than how many companies operate, but Michael Bloomberg is not just any CEO. Michael Bloomberg wants to be president of the United States of America. Can you imagine the outcry, the 24/7 outcry and rage from Democrats and their media allies if President Trump or his children had done something similar to what Bloomberg has done? Think about that. If Donald Trump was in league with the communist leadership of China and made excuses for them and denied that it is a dictatorship, that's all you'd hear about on the news. The Democrats would be in front of TV cameras, standing at microphones, talking about the evils of communist China and how this horrible man in the president in the Oval Office is aiding and abetting them. Even though they would champion someone like Elizabeth Warren, who is a hardcore socialist, or they would champion someone like Bernie Sanders, who is actually crossing beyond just communism light, as he likes to call it, democratic socialism. He's crossing right into communism. They would champion those people, but they would condemn Donald Trump. So Bloomberg has a serious issue. Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents or he's not going to survive. That is either a bald-faced lie for the sake of preserving an income, or it's gross ignorance. Which do you think it is? I think it's the lie. Because Michael Bloomberg is not an idiot. He has shown so. He said so from the debate stage that communism has failed. It's been tried, and every time it's tried, it's been failed. He said so on the debate stage the other night. He knows what's going on in China. But he also knows that in order to continue his business and to keep making profit and to keep paying for all those houses and cars and planes and everything he has to keep communist China happy.
You're out!
Well, not quite yet. Still a few more minutes to go, but we're diving into the final section, the final segment of today's Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Oh, man, oh, man. I'm looking at the handful of stories I've still got here, and I've got a few I really want to get to. I just really, really want to get to. Here's an example. Former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, remember him? Who was held in contempt of Congress, and not just Democrats sticking their tongue out and holding somebody in. This is a bipartisan contempt of Congress judgment against him. This guy was part of the Obama administration. What a piece of work he was. Well, he was not very happy. Not very happy. He lost his temper yesterday in reaction to details surrounding the Democratic prosecutor and Obama administration holdover who dropped the case against former FBI Director Andrew McCabe. He told a reporter to shut the hell up. Accused him of wanting to use the justice system for political reasons. Wow. Not a happy guy. Bless his heart. I'll include that in the show notes today. Make sure you get the show notes. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and the show notes will be right there, probably just a few minutes after I get through recording live here. I do that every day, by the way. Links to the various things I talk about, because they're all based in stories which are in the news, and I'll give you the links to those stories. And it's important because within each story, like the one I'm looking at right now, I can see there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just in what's available on my computer screen in this one article, I see 5 links to other sources. It's valuable information. It's not just what I talk about here, but there's more to the stories. Get the show links. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and grab the show links, the show notes today. I got to look and see. I think you can. I don't remember. It's been a while since I set it up. I think you can actually subscribe and have them sent to your email as well. We'll see. Well, China is in a rush. Speaking of China, we were talking about Bloomberg before the break and his relationship with China. China is in a rush to reopen their factories and markets in the midst of a poorly understood outbreak. It may backfire. And that's a failure that could result in one of the worst depressions the world has ever seen. It's not a secret that the coronavirus, which the politically correct are insisting on calling COVID-19 for some reason, it has dealt a punishing blow to the Chinese economy since its emergence months ago, with over 700 million now under some form of lockdown to control the coronavirus. Work has ground to a halt. And I know this is true. I've seen the video of the places that used to be bustling centers of it, like Shenzhen, China, where there are marketplaces where you can buy all kinds of things and where there are little factories that produce all kinds of stuff that you eventually end up on shelves here in the United States. It's a ghost town. It's just a ghost town. Seeing a slowdown of new cases has prompted the ruling Communist Party to urge work to resume, with the party's Global Times mouthpiece proclaiming, "We must be resolute in resuming economic activity." Considering how little is known about the novel coronavirus pushing workers to return to factories, markets, and sales floors, it does not look like a good decision. Fortunately for virologists, a closed system with the virus exists on board the Diamond Princess cruise ship. Unfortunately for the people on this massive boat, their role as a large-scale Petri dish shows just how contagious this virus, the bug, really is. Despite officials' best efforts to contain the virus on the ship, the initial small number of infected soon soared to 454. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Anthony Fauci told USA Today, the quarantine process failed. I'd like to sugarcoat it and try to be diplomatic about it, but it failed. People were getting infected on that ship. It's unclear why the quarantine failed and the transmission occurred, but it may be because the virus is more easily spread through the air than previously thought. Although it's not thought to be airborne, the CDC still recommends airborne procedures and protective gear. If the coronavirus is able to spread through the air, the cruise ship's ventilation system may be a major factor in the baffling infection rates. Once that possibility is applied to China, where hundreds of millions are holed up in high-rise apartments designed according to loose Chinese standards, the potential of this disaster becomes clear. Although the Chinese government claims to have a handle on the epidemic, changes in the diagnosis criteria have seen confirmed cases spike by over 14,000 in a single day. Skeptics also remain unconvinced that the country's communist regime is being honest. The predicament of the Chinese worker is apparent. The government appears close to giving the all clear for many. Those voicing skepticism on Chinese social media are swiftly silenced. Chinese social credit system also puts pressure on citizens to return to work. While those with symptoms may stay home, the virus can hitch a ride on clothing and other materials. There is even evidence that infected individuals may be able to spread the coronavirus without showing symptoms. China, the world's second largest economy, would be absolutely devastated if this virus made a strong resurgence. The impact on other countries would be downright horrifying. China's exports would grind to a halt, depriving the United States of $480 billion worth of goods. Take a look at some of the things around you right now. Many of these items, including the phone or computer you're reading this article on or listening to this podcast on, likely originated in a Chinese factory. I know that's true for me. The iMac in front of me, the iPhone sitting by my right hand, all of the stuff, the iPad over here where I'm the thing I hit the little...
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Where I play that kind of stuff from. Another iPad over there that's serving as a digital timekeeper. All came out of Chinese factories. Wow. The effect on American retailers would be disastrous. Walmart, for example. They import an estimated 80% of their products from Chinese suppliers. That's according to the Alliance of, for American Manufacturing. You like Hobby Lobby? You know where all that stuff comes from that's in Hobby Lobby? The vast majority of it? Chinese factories. Hobby Lobby has a staff of people who live in China. And what they do is they create and maintain relationships with Chinese manufacturers, and they buy their goods for sale in Hobby Lobby stores. Japan, Germany, the United Kingdom, three of the largest economies in the world, also rely on Chinese exports worth billions. Needless to say, all of these exports grinding to a halt virtually overnight would not be pleasant for the world economy. Even the U.S. economy, at an all-time high thanks to President Donald Trump, would not escape without a major beating. If the quarantines in China are failing just as they are on the Diamond Princess, we could be headed for the biggest economic gut punch since the Great Depression. The government of China needs to be wise. And it's really not wise to tell your people to get out there and start mingling again when you don't know how the virus is spread really, or how to kill it. And the government of China, which controls everything, controls the economy, controls manufacturing. They control everything. It's clear that they care more about that manufacturing and about the business than they care about the people. And isn't that what the progressives say about capitalism? But in capitalism, you see people, you see businesses, you see owners of businesses being compassionate and doing things they need to do to take care of their people so that they won't face dire consequences. And that's the reality. And that's it for me today and for the week. God bless you. Have a great weekend. Let's get back together on Monday, okay? For the next edition of the Daily Perspective. Have a good time this weekend. We'll see you Monday. God bless. Bye-bye.
Take the next 2 days off. How's that?